It's time for building the game with Jason and friends from Tabletop Game Design. The fun never ends. It's at the end of the episode. That's
when it technically ends.
Hello and welcome to Building the Game, a documentary podcast. Today is Monday, April 15th, tax day. I hope you got your taxes in. I got mine in because someone does them for me, because otherwise they would be late every year and probably wrong. But yeah, hope you have that worked out for you, and hope it works out gloriously. It's your host, Jason, here as usual. Also today, joined by someone who seems to be here a lot as well, and that is co-host Emily Vincent. Hello.
Hello. Hi, how's it going?
It's going well. It's good to have you back. You've been on the show a lot recently, but not with me, so you just keep being on when I'm not here.
Going to conventions and being like, all right, everyone, yes, Let's get up really early and record this thing.
You're going to have to keep
late.
That up.
Like, Gamma 1 was really late.
Right. They always seem to be one or the other, right? They're always really late or really early. So I'm going to be missing some conventions this summer, so you're going to have to keep it going, since I know you're going to be at like 4,000 conventions.
All of them. I'm going to be at all of them, apparently.
I do think it's funny because we did an episode a while back where you just openly lied to everyone and said, I'm trying to choose which ones I'm going to do this year. And it turns out the answer is still all of them.
All of them. Actually, I've added at least one to the schedule and might be adding a second. I don't know. We'll figure out if Grand Con can fit.
Yes, Grand Con can fit. If you have to add one, add Grand Con. Speaking of Grand Con, if you go to their website, they just added it this week. Officially, Jason Slingerland, that awesome game designer podcast guy, is a special guest of the convention. So
nice.
I don't even know what that means. I know that it means that I think I get a free badge. But other than I don't know. And I have
I
to
assume
like.
I assume it means I can find you at a table and you'll sign something for me.
Well, the way they do it there, I know that I need to do like 10 hours of games and stuff. So like I can run games, I can do panels. So I'll probably do a bit of both just because why not? So because I can run some playtests. Like I can literally like run like Build a Fire with people, nice. Which at that point, hopefully that will already be Kickstarted at that point. That's the plan at least. So I'll be, you know, post Kickstarter running it. That's pretty exciting stuff is what it is there. Pretty exciting stuff.
When's the Kickstarter date for Build a Fire?
It's not. Okay. So I'm working backwards with it. Like I could have it ready in probably less than a month is my guess, but I'm not going to do that. I'm actually going to try and have it ready in the next month or two, but I don't know if I'll launch it. I'm kind of hesitating based on when the next manufacturing thing will work correctly so that I can make the manufacturing kind of window as short as possible. I don't want to fund a Kickstarter and then have the manufacturing deal I have worked out end up making it not work out in the timing and having to wait longer to get the stuff back. Cause that would not be fun. Ideally I'd like to have it to where it's like, hey, it's ready to go within a month. You know, I'll have the game locked and loaded already. And then, So that's the plan. We'll see how that works.
Very cool. It's a good plan.
It is. I'm yawning. Sorry. It's been a long week already.
I was like, how do I fill the yawn pause? I should say something.
Just gonna call it out.
You got a real good I threw in a good distracting Yeah.
So, so how have you been? What you been up to?
I'm good. I went to New York to try and view the eclipse. It was cloudy, so we got to see the sun go away and come back, but we didn't actually get to see the eclipse.
Right.
While we were there, Eric, my partner, was he was on a podcast. He doesn't co-host a podcast, but it was a running podcast.
That does make sense. That checks out. Yeah.
Yeah, it's called 10 Junk Miles, and the host just like calls various people in the community and they have a little conversation. So they chatted about AI and running and a whole bunch of other stuff. The host has a bunch of questions. You know, if you're on a desert island for, you know, for forever, what's the one book and the one album that you'd bring with you and stuff like that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that was fun. And then just today, I got a bunch of stuff in the mail because I'm working on a pirate costume. So I've been trying on pirate clothes, and I have the tiniest tricorn hat. Like I got like a, you know, like you know, like the British like fascinator, like a tiny hat for like a party.
Yeah.
So I got a pirate hat, but one of those. So it's like a little little baby hat.
I you told me about this a couple days ago in Discord, and I am doing my best not to just really make fun of you. I support it. I totally get why you're doing it, but I just kind of want to tease you about it because I did not, when you said that, I was like, I feel like you're joking because you were not the person I pegged to be like, I'm going to dress up like a pirate, to support my game. So,
I'm not. But like I said, I'm going to all these conventions this year. And some of them, it seems like dressing like a pirate is a thing that one does at that. Including, I'm trying to go to a pirate festival on Cape Cod this summer, which like, I think literally, I don't know if they'll let me in if I'm not dressed like a pirate. Like,
that is probably accurate. Yeah.
Yeah. Not entirely true, but.
And there are plenty of companies when you go through like Gen Con and stuff, especially where they do theme dressed up. Right. Like, and I fully support that. I will never do that just because I just want to be comfortable, like in like clothes that are comfortable. I have dressed up before. I've worn awful, awful costumes that were just not fun to wear. And I don't plan on doing that anymore because I don't have to. So, but your little hat, that'll be fun. That'll be lots of fun. So
I made a cosplay at one point and that was fun. It was like, I was a Sith. That was my swatter character. But so like I can do a costume, but I will say there's a whole pirate aesthetic of like corsets that I'm not sure how I feel about that. I'm trying it out, I'm like, that's a commitment to discomfort for a long period of time. So it might be more of a sash pirate than a corset pirate.
You be the exact kind of pirate you want to be. I mean, you're already wearing a very, very inappropriate hat for pirates. Yes. So like
tiny hat.
Real pirate would be like, what happened to your hat? Arr.
Yeah.
Or something like that. Yeah. You know, basically.
Yeah. But so I guess I can sort of launch into what we're going to talk about tonight, which is sort of what's going on.
I just want to clarify real quick. Yeah. You're not quitting games and you're not leaving.
No.
So just real quick, let's throw that out there. Yeah. Since, you know, Julio was like, guess what? Sorry. Go for it.
So I quit my job.
Yeah, you did.
This is day four for me because we're recording, you know, in the past of not being employed. And there were a lot of reasons for that, right? And it was time for a change for me. It was time for me to leave the role I was in and the company. And I'm lucky enough to be able to take some time to sort of get my head on straight, figure out what I want to do next, and just sort of like be. And so I've decided what I want to do for the next few months is really double down on game design and game publishing.
Yeah.
So I know that sounds like I'm quitting to go full time in the design industry. And I think that's perhaps a little, not quite what it is, but I have quit and I'm going full time, but I'm not yet under the, incorrect assumption that I can make a living on this at this moment in time.
Right. That's not your plan right now. Right. Yeah. Right. I mean, the title of this episode very well may be Emily is going full-time game design, but I'm just kidding. I will not do that.
It's got to be Emily's got a tiny pirate hat, right?
Yeah, no, that's actually real solid. Yeah. So, yeah, that's probably going to be it. But yeah, no, I mean, I think that you had even said to me, like, after you did that, you were like, I'm worried that people are going to be like, oh, Emily's, you know, trying to do this full time now. And like, you're like, no, I'm just like taking some time to do that. And I think that's smart because, you know, I will say as someone who quit my job, in the same type of way you did, for some of the same type of reasons, maybe even just needing a change and needing it to be, you know, it's just, it'd been a long time and you needed something new. Right. I think that, for me, there was a lot of pressure of immediately being like, okay, I got to make this new job work now. Like I work for myself now. And it wasn't just game design. It was the coaching stuff too. But I really wanted to lean into the game design as well. And that's stressful. So I think the way you're doing it with being like, you know what, this is not my full-time commitment. This is what I'm doing for now. I think that's really smart.
Yeah. So, I will say in leaving my job, right, when you leave a job, particularly like the position I was in, I had a lot of people who reported to me and stuff like that. And I was in the leadership group. So, you know, they send out an email about your last day and they always want to say what's next. Right. And so, you know, and when you leave a company, they want to make sure that like everyone's like, oh, wow, that's a clear, amazing opportunity. So, you know what I told them, I'm going to go do this game design stuff. I've got a Kickstarter going up this fall, you know, and the reaction I got from people was amazing, right? I mean, I just had people being like, I am so inspired by this choice, right? You're this, like, you're taking such a risk and a bold leap. You're following a passion project, right? And I just kind of assumed everyone was going to be like, okay, you do that. Best of luck to you.
Those are good people, though.
You know? Yeah.
Those are good people to have said that, right?
Yeah. It was really cool, right? And I've got some connections of, you know, some people came out of the woodwork who were like, I was also thinking about taking like a flying leap into a really different industry, right? And
I'm going to do it. And then in 6 months, they're going to be like, Emily, you ruined my life.
I'm like, you make your choices. You know your finances. I do not. Right.
And I mean, I think that, you know, that's always worth noting, right? Is it takes a lot of privilege to do that, to walk away from a job that you've been in for a while that, you know, supports you, right? I mean, it is a position that not a lot of people find themselves in, you know, nowadays, to where they can just be like, you know what? Nope. So I think it's always worth noting that. I mean, obviously I know you are very conscious 100%. Of that, but
Yeah. No. And you know, I've spent 20 years in the tech sector, right? And like, I kind of, you know, some companies have sabbaticals and I'm like, this is maybe like a sabbatical type thing for me, but yeah, right. I know
but I'm not coming back afterwards.
Forever sabbatical. You know, I know tech folks are perhaps overrepresented in the gaming industry because
they were able to,
you know, save up the money and then take this kind of risk. Right.
So. Right. Right. And I think that just like, you know, I mean, historically, those of us who, because I worked, you know, I was in the mortgage industry, but a lot of it was mortgage tech stuff. And like, I think that a lot of us who were in tech were also drawn to other bits of technology as we were growing up, right? Especially people around, you know, our years of age. I know we're a ways apart, but like, So I think that, I do think that people who are into tech are more likely to be into games. I think that's a thing. And that's a fair assumption and that's okay. It's not like a stereotype. It's just a thing.
Yeah. Yeah. So now that I've given all the caveats and all the like wiggles, I'm really excited that I'm about to do full-time game design for, I don't know, the next 6 months or so. Right. And publishing, not the same design and publishing. And so I wanted to sort of talk about like, how am I going to do that? How am I structuring my time? What am I hoping to accomplish? I was hoping, Jason, you could, critique my plan, poke some holes in it, give me some new ideas, or maybe the folks on the Discord can listen in and be like, I got some ideas for you.
Exactly. Yes.
That was my topic for today.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's talk.
Okay. So, let's start on the publishing side. I declared myself a publisher, and I applied for the Horizon Fellowship with Gamma, and I got it, and I had a booth, and I was like, I am publishing Pirates of the High Tees. So I am publishing Pirates of the High Tees. The Kickstarter is on September 17th, which is 2 days before Talk Like a Pirate Day.
Well done.
I know. It's like I planned it. So yeah, I'm spending the summer trying to figure out how to do that. And so, I mean, I know a bunch of the pieces. So I've been trying to figure out the development question. And so maybe we can talk a little bit about development.
So you're like, Jason, help me. And like, you're like, let me ask you about the thing you know the least about first. Yeah, let's do it.
No. So, like, I just want to, like, share this journey with people because it's been a journey over the last couple months. So I've been working on Pirates by myself, which is, for me, a very strange thing because as a professional designer, I have almost always worked in design teams, right? I'm never the only person who's got to weigh in on the decisions, and there's always a here's what I've decided person, and it's often me. There's other engaged people who have a stake and who are designing other parts of the system. And so, you know, I've taken Pirates for, you know, almost 2 years now. And I was like, I think I need another set of eyes who can be sort of like dedicated to the project in enough of a way that they can start weighing out some of the, you know, the choices, yeah, the final choices, right?
Absolutely. That makes total sense.
So I let a bunch of people in my network know that I was looking for a developer, and I have talked to all sorts of different people. So there's a bunch of people that you can pay to be developers. And I went and I talked to them, and they're all varying modes of expensive. Like these
that
are like
tracks.
People with development companies. And interestingly, basically all of them, except for one who's a little bit more affordable, I'll say, all of them said, your project is too small. It would not be worth your money to pay us to develop your project. Mm-hmm. Right. Which I was appreciative of. Right.
Right.
That was cool. I got introduced to a bunch of people that I don't know who do development gigs. Mm-hmm. They are also paid by the hour. And a couple of them gave me the same thing of like, you know, we're, you know, I am more expensive than what you should be investing in your first game. Right. That's what they all said. They all basically were like, we're way cooler. Get out.
Who are you? Get out of here. How dare you talk to me?
Yeah. But some of them also gave me the advice of like, you shouldn't be looking to pay someone to develop, particularly like early in your publishing company when you don't have a lot of money, right? But like that someone who knows your game and is you know, a friend, right? A colleague, someone you play test with a lot.
But are they saying you shouldn't pay them?
No, they're saying you should pay them, but that you should work with someone that you know rather than meet a random person. They're like, no, work with someone that you have a good relationship with. And you know, take that to a like pay them sort of
model. That makes a lot more sense than what I thought you said, which was you should just get a friend to do it and not pay them. That's what I heard. And I was like, what kind of advice is that?
Yeah, no, nobody is suggesting to not pay people, which again is wonderful to hear. But then I've started pulsing some of my friend group, right? And I've got a couple people I've been talking to, and there are also the different models, right? Some people are like, I'm looking for an hourly. Some people are like, I'd like a percentage of, you know, like a designer, I'd want a cut of the final product or cut of the Kickstarter or, you know, things like that. So I'm still in that exploration and process, but I've sort of come a long way from like thinking like, I need to hire someone who is known and advertises themselves as a developer to like, all right, find someone that I know I work well with and create the right compensation model for that. So I've been trying to find a developer, still working on it. Although I don't know, maybe I'll have it figured out by the time this posts in like 3 days.
That'd be cool.
Probably not. But the big questions there are balancing the choices. There's like an action selection. So balancing the choices for the 4-player mode versus the 3-player mode, getting the 2-player mode to be compelling. And then I really want either 1-4 or 2-5 as my player count. I don't know how to make a solo mode for this game. But also every time I play test it at 5, it falls apart. So I keep having to be like, it's not fun at 5. Let it go. Let it go. That's going to have to be an add-on at some point, right?
And do people have a lot of opinions about that? Like that you shouldn't? Like that it's got to play 5? Or is that just something you've really wanted it to do?
that's something I've really wanted it to do. I don't quite understand why it doesn't play five. Like, I know it's just too slow. There's too long between your your turns.
I think you just said you do understand why.
I know.
Like, I don't understand why, but here's the problem.
I know, but I'm like, it shouldn't be too much longer. It's not that much longer. Your turns aren't that long. But, I mean, I play tested at five like a week ago, and the people were so unhappy, clearly about the time, but they were like, I think all of these tokens are terrible, right? I think this is bad. I think you need to, like, streamline all these things. And it was just like cuts, 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 cuts. And I was like, what they're all trying to solve is it took too long, right?
Right.
So right. They're cutting all of the choices so that there's no choices, so that it can just be faster. So
that's like, I'm just trying to simplify your game. Oh, for what reason? To make it end sooner. Thanks for that. That's great.
Yeah. So now I'm sort of focused in on solo mode. I think I figured out a two-player mode that's working. And then just a little bit of like the card values. And balancing the cards, because I made some choices about, you know, point values, and I would just love a second. It was gut, right? And you know, we did a, you know, have double, you know, it's not the first set of points, right, that I landed on, but there's something there.
I think balance testing is my least favorite thing in the world, and not because it's hard, because balance testing is not hard, it just takes forever, right? Like, you balance test by playing the game 8,000 times and trying different things, like you were doing with the tokens, right? Where you were like, try this, now try that, now try this, now try that, and see how it works. Like, that is, that's a lot of stuff to do.
Yeah. And I, you know, I don't think a game has to be perfectly balanced. So
No.
We're not going to get there. But there's some choices I made where, like, for each pirate fleet, there's an even distribution of points, but there's not an even distribution of flavors. So you wind up with stuff where, like, some dishes that have no flavors are worth 3 points, but some dishes that have one flavor are worth 3 points just because of which fleet they're in. And people are like, that's weird. Right. And
right.
Cause one is just inherently more valuable than the other. So.
Yeah. That seems like a fair critique.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, but it's just those kinds of things, right? That I just need someone else who's sort of as, maybe not as deeply invested in, as me, but more deeply invested.
Yeah, no, different kind of, a detached investment, right? Yes.
Yeah.
Not the typical, like, this is my game, I'm super passionate about it, you know?
Yeah.
There's a difference, and that is important to have that difference, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's, like, the game development, then there's, like, the graphic design and art, and I have the card art working and handled. I'm making some graphic design decisions that I'm a little bit freaked out about, because I'm just like, I'm making them, like, I'm saying this is the card.
This is what
layout,
we're doing,
right? This is what we're doing. Yeah. I'd love to have a developer on board to talk about that, but like, I gotta get an artist to work on the cover, because the other piece of this is marketing. Like, it is marketing, right? Turtles all the way down.
That's a fantastic reference.
That could also be the title of the episode. You know, I said I added a bunch of conventions to my schedule. Because I'm gonna go to in-person events and try and convince people to play the game, follow the Kickstarter, you know, all of those things. And I'm going to try and figure out a social media plan. So I'm looking to the only person on this call with a TikTok account. Jason.
I outed me for having a TikTok account. Well, I'm probably the worst person to ask about TikTok, because I have, you know, an account that has nothing on it. I think it has a picture on it and maybe a bio. And I follow Farm RPG, the farming game I play. That is the extent of my TikTok knowledge. I have been crafting a plan as to how I'm going to put content out on TikTok, though. So I am thinking about it. I actually have a plan. I'm not willing to discuss that plan.
Okay. Are you not willing to discuss it on the podcast, or you're not willing to discuss it with me offline?
No.
Because I also need to make a plan.
No. So, like, I mean, I can tell you what my plan is, but I don't know that it's going to be useful to you.
Yeah.
I mean, my plan just involves, I'm going to do one little video for every game I have published so far. Cause that's like, I don't know, 12 pieces of content right there. And then I thought I'd put some stuff about like, oh, getting ready to record the show, or like, this is how a show gets recorded. Like, and that sort of thing. My goal is to just get some content out there so it doesn't look dead. Mm-hmm. And then every once in a while, put new content out there. That's my goal, is with as little work as possible.
Yeah. And I think the piece that I'll step back from TikTok and say, I'm actually trying to think about what are the right ways for me to build community. Right. Mm-hmm. And is that with, you know, I've got a Discord. It's a little, there's a little tumbleweeds rolling through it because I don't post there very much.
I didn't even know you have a Discord. I'm not even on that.
Everyone join my Discord. You can see art from pirates there and me popping in every 3 weeks being like, oh, hey guys, I didn't forget. But no, I need to figure out how to build my community, and whether that's on board game TikTok or, you know, I'm old, so I watch TikToks when they hit Instagram Reels. And so, you know, but not overextend myself. There was a really good talk at Gamma Expo on, figuring out how to build the right community for you and what you can commit to and what you can be consistent with, right. And stuff like that. So, I'm just trying to figure all of that out. And then on top of it, figure out the, you know, I'm going to do some advertising, for pirates as we get closer to the Kickstarter. And so when do I need stuff ready to get to content creators for previews? When do I need to have things, good pictures that I could put in advertising? Do I want to do, you know, crowdfunding nerds or launch boom or something like that? So
I don't know what any of those words you just said, Matt. That's a true story. No idea what you just said.
Companies that will help you with your advertising.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm aware of what that is. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So crowdfunding nerds primarily helps you sort of organize your ad funding, your ads on like the Meta platforms. So Facebook and Instagram. And then Launch Boom, it's more like, it's a different model, right? They've got a cool funnel, where you get people to sort of commit by paying a single dollar, which gets them access to like some small thing, right? Of like a 2-card expansion or something like that. But they find they have a much higher conversion rate for people who've given the dollar.
Interesting.
With the caveat that, you know, and I mean, I talked to them, so I got their pitch, right? And it's a good pitch. But you know, they said they're seeing a lot of people sort of copying their funnel, but doing it slightly wrong. Right. And so like, but like, cause I've heard a lot of people say, right, they don't like the Launch Boom funnel where they ask you to pay a dollar cause it feels predatory. Right. But you are supposed to get that dollar back if you choose not to back, or if the Kickstarter doesn't fund, right. It is not taking your dollar and you don't get anything for it. Right. You know, and stuff like that. So I gotta suss out how the industry is actually feeling. Right. Is the community okay with this or not? Right. Like
another thing is Kickstarter okay with that too?
I think so. Where's Nicole?
I don't know where they are, but they would certainly be the one that would know. But that's just a thought. Like, I don't know if that is. Yeah. I don't know. Kickstarter has weird rules sometimes. So it's just a thought of like, it's probably fine, but what if it's not? I mean, like, you probably want to know that ahead of time.
So the game Botany funded recently at, like, they got, like, $1 million. And I think they were on Kickstarter, and they were definitely, well, I thought they were on Launch Boom. So I thought they play well together, but I don't know. I have a lot of research to do. So so there's all of that, right? So it's going to be sort of pirates-heavy summer. Mm-hmm. Adding conventions, adding, you know, playtesting events. I want to get Good Kitties in good shape as well, because my goal was to, you know, publish Pirates and then have Good Kitties sort of be on the queue for the next one. So I can't like ignore it for the next 6 months.
Fair.
But so what I've sort of made my plan for the summer is I I have a little checklist for the day of like, mm-hmm. what did you do for the business? What did you do for a creative game design sort of thing? What did you do for like exercise? and did you catch up on your emails? Because I've gotten really, really bad at that. And I hate it. I hate being the person who doesn't respond to emails, but I find it overwhelming right now. So yeah.
Emails are awful. Like awful. Yeah. I would, the only thing I'd rather get less than an email is a phone call.
Mm, like, yeah.
Like don't call me. Don't email me. Yes. Just text me or hit me up on Discord. That's cool. If you don't have my phone number, probably Discord is the best place to reach me.
Yes. But I have a backlog because I haven't been able to get to a bunch of stuff after Gamma because of everything that was going on in my mm-hmm. life.
Yeah.
So I just have to get through that backlog and then I'll be all right. So, those are all the sort of like publishing business stuff. But I actually wrote a little blog post of why I decided to become a publisher and things like that. But I do plan to continue designing games that I do not publish, right? That are not inside of the Pink Hawk brand.
I don't know. I've literally heard that's impossible. You can't do both. I've heard that feedback many times from people that they say like you can't do both things, and it's absolutely not true. But but you will hear that feedback. Like if you haven't heard that feedback yet, you will hear that feedback.
I have heard that a bunch, right? That I have to pick and choose, and I suspect there is some nugget there of underlying. You know, there's a reason people are saying this,
mm-hmm.
But I think that blanket statement is probably too. I don't know. I say this, I don't know what I'm talking about, but it doesn't feel right to me. It feels like there's nuance there. And, you know, I've only been designing games for a couple of years, and I felt like I was moving forward the most when I was doing a lot of game design simultaneously, right? I was mm-hmm. working on three mm-hmm. or four different games, and I just haven't been able to do that recently with, you know, the full-time job. And so now that I don't have that, and I'm going to start going back to like designing multiple things at a time and
mm-hmm.
doing a bunch of rapid iteration and stuff like that. So
doing what you want to do.
Yeah. So I've set myself some like design challenges. And I guess here's where I'd love to, you know, share that, mm-hmm. but also mm-hmm. get some thoughts or feedback. So in general, right, I think there's sort of like three types of like, not brainstorming, but like there's just like sit down with a blank piece of paper and like what are ideas for games, right? Brainstorm names of games, wordplay, right? You know, like themes that would be interesting, right? Mm-hmm. And that to me, I don't know, I probably want to do that periodically to update my list of stuff. But then there's take a specific idea and sort of do a whole like story of it, right? So we're gonna make a game about gnomes fighting cats, right? So mm-hmm. spend 5 minutes sketching out as much of a game about gnomes versus cats as you can, and then put that piece of paper aside and then do it again, right? And then put mm-hmm. that piece of paper mm-hmm. aside and do it again, right? And so that's just some of my like UX design, you know, process that like I just haven't had a chance to do some of those in a while. And so I want to do that. And then there's the, you know, take it to like, and actually try and prototype it and see where it goes. And, you know, that
right,
kind of
right. want to do that. Absolutely.
So I want to build some of that and like, maybe I'll do that on Mondays, or maybe I'll, you know, that'll be my Fridays, or I don't know, something where I sort of do a more free form, something like that. Regularly. But then the other ones I've got, so I'm interested in trying to design for specific companies. Not necessarily with the like, if I design this for Hasbro, it will be picked up by Hasbro, but more from the like, put myself in the mind of that company. What does all play look for?
Right? I thought you were literally saying, I want to create four different companies. And I was like, oh, so you're just going to like I was like, what are you talking about? Like this one off the rails fast. Fast.
No, not the number. F-O-R. So yeah, like what does Allplay look for? What does Hasbro mm-hmm. look for? Right. What do I know? And like, if I tried to give myself an assignment to design for them, what would I do?
Right. Right. As a thought experiment or as I want to design this game so that this company will buy it?
I think as a thought experiment. And then if there's a game that I like that comes out of that, that I want to pursue enough to, you know, turn it into a prototype or something like that. I don't know. I think some of the folks on the Discord, right, they really target very specifically with some of their games, or they know very specifically who this game would be good for.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's a skill. Like that is a people like, I feel like Clarence is really solid about that.
That's what
Clarence Simpson. what'd you say?
That's who I was thinking of.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I think that like, I think there's good and bad to doing that. As a thought experiment, it's never bad. And you know, as long as you have the time to do that. I think when it comes down to, is it good or bad to say, I'm designing this game for Hasbro, right? With no backup. That's rough, right? Because like, if you're really trying to do that, you're going to put a lot of work in for probably a no, right?
Right.
I mean, just statistically speaking. But if you're designing for like, hey, I'm thinking of Hasbro, but I'm going to more focus on a mass market style with this.
Right.
I like doing that a lot. I also have seen limited success with that. There are times where I'm like, this is the type of company that needs to buy this. And then I'm totally wrong. And there are other times where I'm right and it works. But I mean, I certainly would say that the risk to that is that you can just end up wasting a lot of time. If no one in that market is interested in it. But again, as a thought experiment, I think it always makes sense. And I don't think it's not that I think it doesn't make sense in the other ways, right? Mm-hmm. I just think you have to be cool with how much time you're investing in it and know that that's what you want to do, right? And I don't think there's a right or wrong answer to that. I mean, I don't think you're going to end up doing with that one guy from the internet whose name I won't mention, who was like, I just work on a game for a day and then I pitch it to publishers and I don't want to do any more work than that unless they want it, you know? And otherwise I just throw it in the trash. I would never advocate for that because that is incredibly pretentious and, not cool.
It's going to work for most of us, right? I mean, right.
Yeah, yeah. And I guarantee it doesn't always work for that person either. Like, it just doesn't. I mean, it might work sometimes. But I've also seen publishers where I've done that, or I've seen other people do that. Hey, would you be interested in a game that did this? Oh, yeah, this sounds really cool. I like this. You know, and then you work on the game, you show it to them, and like, no, this doesn't actually fit. Like, or yeah, that sounded cool, but now it's changed, you know? Unless you are someone, you know, really popular as a designer, this person was not, the odds of them being willing to put money down for you ahead of time from like a large company, I don't think that's very great. I think those are pretty low odds.
And I think it's partly thought experiment and partly like, I'll call it muscle building. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Of like, can I design with a set of constraints that is not my own personal taste. Right.
Yep. I think it's super important.
Yeah. I think there will be limits. Like, I don't think I'm interested in designing party games.
Games are the worst. The party game designers, total just jackasses.
Good thing there's none of those on this call.
It's good. Yeah.
Yeah.
Nobody likes a party game designer.
Yeah. And I just, for whatever reason, I'm like, I look at party games and I'm like, that is so simple. There's a rule. I don't know how you pick the rule that's fun.
Like, I don't actually, I feel like I don't understand that either. Sometimes we just like, it just happens. Like sometimes you're just like, oh, that was the rule. That was the fun rule. That was it. That was the fun rule. Look, we found it. Can I do that again? Probably not.
But I think, right, when I think of mass market, and maybe this is my own naivete showing through, right? But I'm like, there's Hasbro and there's Ravensburger and there's the Op, and they all kind of like if you designed something that that has the vibes of one of them, like mm-hmm. you might be able to pitch it to all three of them, right?
Right. Exploding Kittens is another one on that list too.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
And there are others. I mean, there's Big Potato, and some others. Yeah. But I mean, I get what you're saying. Yeah. I mean, you know, just if you say like I think it is a smart idea to say something like I want to design something for the mass market, right? Mm-hmm. Or I want to design something that is going to be crunchier, you know, a little more rules heavier than I normally would design, or that sort of thing. That's the experiment I always try and do, and I'm always like, nope. Don't like this. Don't like this.
So like a thought experiment I'm interested in, and I don't expect to be pitching to this company, right? But like what makes a Stonemaier game? Right? Like mm-hmm. what like it's a very distinct style.
About right? $1 million, like, dollars, I think it's probably.
But like, can I wrap my head around what that is? Right. And if I start to pull that thread, is it fun for me to try and design? Do I get to something I like? Because my goal with this whole thing is to go down these paths. And if I find a good game, then I found a good game, right? And I can figure out who to pitch it to and, you know, all of these things. Or maybe it'll end up being my style anyway. And I'll give it a Pink Hawk twist, right? But like, I think it's just good muscle building to give myself real constraints.
Totally agree. I know that for me, one of the biggest muscle building things was doing this up for the podcast, right? Like doing the design challenges and stuff for that. That was over the years, and we don't really do those much anymore, but I mean, those were a workout and for your brain, and certainly helped me get better at that and kind of flex those muscles a bit and work them out. And I want to be clear, I'm not like poo-pooing your idea. I think it's a good idea. I don't, out of context, want a bunch of people to hear this and think like, yeah, I should go design games for these specific companies. Like, cause that's, is likely a losing proposition.
Agreed.
But I think as a designer, as a challenge for yourself, that's a fantastic idea. And then if you end up with a game and you're like, no, I want to pursue this, hey, I might as well show it to that company or the other companies like that and see what happens. That's awesome. What a great idea. I mean, when I'm working on a game, I try to think about like what types of companies might be interested in that sometimes. Other times I just do it and then try and figure out who would want it. And you know what I mean? When you do it from that kind of that area of, I have no idea who would publish this. Sometimes you end up with games that you can't find a publisher for, you know, and I have several of those sitting around where I didn't have a publisher in mind necessarily who could do it. And now, like, I don't know that we'll ever find a publisher for them because of the component requirements or, you know, the play style or the theme or something like that. Right. So I think there's pluses and minuses to both, but I do want to, like, 17 to 30 minutes ago, you said something to the effect of like, you want to set aside some time specifically to work on that every week.
Yes.
And that is, so that's a practice that I would always have my teams do when I worked for them, was I would say like, take your normal things you want to get done, make your list, do your things, or the things you have to get done, right? I mean, in your case, there's a lot more want to than have to right now, which is great.
Right.
But then specifically set aside X amount of time. Like, you know, I usually said like 4 hours a week. If you're going to work a 40-hour week, do 4 hours a week and take that time to work on things that you want to work on that will benefit, you know, for them, I would say that will benefit you and the company, right? If it's benefiting you and your job, it's benefiting the company. Like, work on whatever you want during that time. I don't care what it is, you know, and prioritize that time. You're backed up. You got other stuff to do. That's fine. We'll be slow. We'll get it in late, and I'll take the blame for that. That time is protected. You have to use that time for this. And it's tremendous doing it that way because it really does force you to take the time to work on the things that you want to work on, right? Which is important, you know, and for you, I think that you're going to have so many things, especially as you near the Kickstarter and these conventions and stuff, that it's going to take a lot to force yourself to spend any amount of time doing that. Right. Because because you're the type of person that's been in a business job for a long time, right? And so, right. like, structure is just kind of like your natural state, right?
Like, yes. Like, I need a meeting on my calendar. It tells me where to go.
Exactly, right? And I remember what that was like. And so anyways, yeah, I think it's important to do that. I think it's really smart you're setting aside time for that.
Yeah, so I guess most of my design challenges are around constraints, right? So there's the give myself the, like, what would this company want sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And then there's, so there's specific mechanics. So, like, I kind of want to go through, what's it, the Jeff Engelstein and Isaac Shalev book. It'd just be like, all right, I'm going to make a game with Push Your Luck. And I'm going to go through the Push Your Luck chapter. And I'm going to, like, pick a thing. And I'm going to build a game around Push Your Luck. Because, like, my brain doesn't, every time I've tried to do Push Your Luck, it doesn't push your luck.
Yeah.
It just doesn't go.
100%. That is a fantastic way to do that. That book is great. Get the newest edition because it's got a ton more stuff in it. It's like the second edition, I think. Unless you already have one, and then just use that.
I have one. So, yeah.
Then just use that.
It is. It's brown.
Oh, with the brown cover and like the chess pieces on it. That's the second edition, I think. Yeah. Okay. So yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, there's some like mechanics that I haven't used, but I want to use that I want to try and design around. There's some like component restrictions. So like, I've never made a game that's just cards. Mm-hmm. I've never made an 18 card game. I've never made a game that fits in a mint tin, right? And like, I'm like, will those be interesting? They don't call to me other than the like, could I make something that was only cards?
But
maybe if I sit with it for an hour or 20 minutes or something like that, I'll be like, oh, here we go. Right.
Yeah. And that book is great for that because you could literally be like, what are games with just cards? And then just read the mechanics they're using and think about it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So then I think the other category of constraints I'm giving myself, other than, you know, brainstorm from a game name or a theme or something like that is like, I don't know what to call these. I called it style in my list, but like they don't go together. So like there's cozy games, which is I think right in my wheelhouse. I love a cozy game, right? There's war games. I have never done a war game.
You should do a Euro war game style thing.
I was like going to say, there's Euros.
1940s,
right?
You know, something just real heavy. It's a great, should do it.
Right? I know nothing about some of these genres, right? I don't know that I've even ever played a war game. Is Risk a war game?
Yeah, I think by definition, probably, yeah.
Okay, great.
Like, I mean, it depends on how, I think it depends on what you define as war games, right? Risk is literally a game about war where you're fighting each other in a war. Yeah. So,
but Votes for Women, I've also heard described as a war game.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think that is war the theme or is, and, or the mechanic or both, you know, or not.
Yeah. I think I'm thinking of where it's the mechanic, as opposed to the theme. A game where war is the theme is not going to be a fit for me.
No, that's why I was joking about
like
that.
Unless it's like cats versus dogs or something like that. Like
unless it's pirates having a war about, like tea or, you know, cats and dogs having like dogs having a war, like doing missions and stuff.
Yes. Yeah. I've totally not designed any games with war or that are war adjacent. You're totally correct. The war of knitting. It's fine.
Stab each other with stabby needles. That's what you just call it. Stabby hooks.
Stabby hooks, needles. So crochet hooks, knitting needles.
Yeah. So crochet hooks.
There's Euro games.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really want to do farming, but I think that there's a more nuanced definition of a Euro game.
Euro.
Spend a little time thinking about that.
Right. If you can take a game and make it long and have a lot of mechanics
and no
make
dice.
And make it boring, I would say that's probably a Euro game.
I'm going to struggle with the boring part and the no dice part. That's
no, if you just, if it's a Euro, it'll be boring. Don't worry. No, I think it can have dice. Like no. There are games that really, no. There are games I play that feel like Euros that had dice.
Probably only as like input randomness, certainly not output randomness. Right. So I think you can roll and then do stuff with those dice. I don't think you can like use it to determine the outcome of a battle or something like that. But that's like that video, right? Of like the Ameritrash versus the Euro game, where like mm-hmm. the Euro game is like super boring and Ameritrash has like 10,000 dice. You roll your dice and then so you can roll your dice and take your dice back so you can roll your dice.
Top 6 Euro games with dice. Let's see if we agree with this. The okay. Grand Astoria the Grand Austria Hotel. I've literally never heard of this. The artwork is pretty.
Not played that.
Solarius Mission. Never heard of that either.
Nope.
Roll for the Galaxy. Heard of that.
I haven't played it.
I didn't know that was a Euro, though.
I also didn't know that.
Castles of Burgundy. Okay. That is, like, that's a Euro. And it's got dice. So, The Voyages of Marco Polo. Listen, I don't care what that game is. It's a Euro. Just put that name. It's got to be a Euro, right? Number one. It's like a French word. It's like Troyes or Troyes or Tres or
Troyes.
Y-E-S. Yeah.
Yeah. We'll say Troyes or Troy. It's probably Troy.
The T is silent in French words, so it's Royes. I'm kidding. It's only when that's at the end. Like, you know.
I was like, I thought the S was silent.
Anyways, that is listed as number one of it. So
I clearly don't play Euros. I thought I played some Euros. I don't think I play them.
Anytime I can't.
Puerto Rico. Is that a Euro?
I don't know. I've never played Puerto Rico. I always said Stone Age was a Euro, but I could be wrong. We're going to just Google stuff.
Is
Stone Age a Euro game?
Is Catan a Euro? It has dice, but
oh, it says Stone Age is a Euro game that integrates a heavy dice element. I don't know, like Catan, I never thought about Catan as a Euro just because I mean it's from Europe. Oh no. Upon its release, Settlers of Catan became one of the first Euro games.
Yeah.
But see, like I feel like that term, God, this could be a whole episode, has become corrupted, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, Euro games originally meant games from Europe, right?
Yes.
Versus so,
America.
But yeah. Now, like, that's not the case anymore. You know,
now it's
like,
a style, right?
Yeah, now it's a style.
Instead of mechanics.
Right.
And...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, examples of themes are Carcassonne, Puerto yep. Rico, Power yeah. Grid, Imperial, and French.
Troy?
It looks like Bruxelles, but I'm sure that the X is not.
Oh, it's probably Brussels, right? It's probably the country, right?
It's got an X in it, though. And Brussels yeah, yeah, does yeah. not have an X in it, does it?
Yeah, but maybe... No, it doesn't. But, like, maybe I also it's like back when Vs were used, right?
You just... That is... I think you're confused. There's no way that's the case. If I'm wrong, somebody tell me I'm wrong. But anyways.
You said anyways. B-R-U-X-E-L-S?
Yeah.
I think what we're asking is listeners if... Oh, that's probably, like, because there's two L's.
Oh, it's totally Brussels. You were right. It's the capital of Belgium. They just used to spell. Is Brussels the same as Bruxelles? Yeah. Yeah, it is. It's just the way you say it in French. Freaking French people. If you're a French right. person who listens to the podcast, I'm sorry.
Listeners, we need some people to volunteer to talk about Euro games because clearly Jason and I are not the expert on Euro games.
No.
I played a really good one where you had to build a dam, and you also had to raise sheep, and it's like a competitive cooperative game. I think it was popular a couple years ago. But,
congratulations, you've just described 75 Euro games.
So the trick is you have to collaborate to build the dam, but you're independently farming sheep. So I played against Eric, who just let me build the entire dam, and he just made money off the sheep. And I was like, someone's got to protect these sheep. And he's like, you got this.
You just kept doing it.
And, but we ended up tied. And when if there's a tie, the person who contributed the most to the dam wins. So I won by protecting the sheep.
I see. Good job.
Yeah, that's me. And so then, so I got Euros, and then I had filler games on the list, which I don't think I've ever managed to make a game under 30 minutes. So I was like, how could I make a short game?
Filler
probably
games.
Probably with only cards.
Filler games are in my heart. Like, that is, filler games. I know how to design filler games. You just make games that play in less than 30 minutes. You got a filler game right there. That's the whole rule. It's that simple. What do you do in the game? Doesn't matter. Do it in 30 minutes or less. It's filler. That's not actually true. I think that if a game is too complex or thinky, even if you can play it in a short amount of time, it's not a Euro. Oh, yeah, I mean, not like... a Euro. not a filler. Also, if it's a party game, it's not a filler game. So there's that too.
Boop. Boop plays in about 10 minutes, maybe 15. Mm-hmm. Is that a filler game?
I don't think a boop is a filler because not to my son who beats everyone. He's only lost one game. He's played like 20. Like, he's just like so good at it. But anyways, I think that it's interesting because like when I think of a filler game, and this is probably because of Jason Katarski and Green Couch Games, I think of a small box deck, like a card type game. I think of classic card games, that sort of thing. And like of my games, I'm looking at three of them. Four of them are filler games, I would say. Like, and they're all card games in small boxes.
Is also what I think of. Like, I wanna, what is my Abandon All Artichokes, right? Like,
right. Oh god, that game is so good.
So good.
Here's what we're gonna do. We're gonna commit to this right now. We are gonna have an episode, a big roundtable episode, where we're going to talk about all the different types of games. We're going to make a list, and then we're going to get several people on, and we're going to talk about it.
Yes.
And we're only going to bring on people who know about a type of game.
Yes.
And it's going to be great. I want to do that now, and then we'll get like some like messages that are like, that's wrong, and then that'll be fun too.
Fight me.
I'll be like, no, that's the best part. I'll be like, fight that person. Fight that, because it's not I'm not the one to fight that person, right?
Yeah.
So we're going to do that. That'll be fun. Yeah. In a future episode at some point here, we'll do that. That sounds like a lot of fun.
This sounds great.
What else, though, should we cover for you before we're done?
I think that's it. This is my plan. This is my big plan, and I need a pirate costume. So I have a tiny hat, and I was going to get a teapot earring, maybe like... Because I'm trying to go with this like pirate, but Victorian tea.
Right. Have you considered getting a sash that has like tea stuff on it?
Oh, I didn't think of that.
Like
I
a tea print or something, or like this is what you need. Let me just tell you, you need to find somebody who can make you a sash, right?
I can make you a sash.
But go out and find fabric with like all those like English and stuff desserts on it. Or even get that fabric printed for yourself.
I could get that fabric.
Then do that.
Yeah.
That would be amazing. Then you could actually even have it say Pirates of the High Tees on the sash.
So I have a friend who makes bags. Mm-hmm. And so what I was going to do at some point was get, because I have a bunch of food art now. And so I was going to put together a fabric and then like have a Pirates of the High Tees like backpack or purse or something like that.
Fantastic idea. Yeah. You should absolutely do that.
Yeah.
100% support.
That is a thing that is going to happen. This is my plan. I have put it all into a project planning tool, which I'm sure I'll abandon shortly, but it was good to get it all out of my head. I did. I made a list. I just made it in software instead of on a piece of paper.
Well, I use my notes on my computer. It's not like I hand wrote a list. I used to do that. It was stupid.
I have so many pieces of paper. I make a new list every Saturday and then I just throw out the old list. So like, but I get overwhelmed when it gets too long. Mm-hmm. And so I need to be able to like collapse parts of it and prioritize and just see the things that mm-hmm. I've decided to work on today. Right. So I dump everything into the task list or into the backlog, and then I can star like, these are the things I want to accomplish today. And I get through as many as I can. Then I add a few more the next day and just,
right. That's
how I keep myself from like being paralyzed with,
yep. With industry. I think you have a good plan. I think it's going to go great. Well, obviously, listeners, we'll keep checking in on this one to see, not this one, like Emily, like this one, like this series of, you know, how Emily's doing with this stuff. And, you know, so I'm excited for you. I think you're going to do awesome. I think it's going to be great. I think it's going to be real cool. So
me too.
Thanks for being willing to share all of it, on the show. And, you should probably give out all your social media information now, since you're trying to get people to do that, except for maybe your email, since you can't seem to respond to that.
Yeah. You can find me on Discord or Blue Sky at Emily Keeps Kitties, or on Instagram at Pink Hawk Games, which is also my website, pinkhawkgames.com. Come find me. There's also a Pink Hawk Games Discord, which maybe I will actually be doing a better job of keeping up. So, like I said, that's in the plan for the next week or so. But yeah, find me on social media. Find me on Discord. Say hello. Come play test my games. I have to play a lot of them this summer.
Awesome. If you want to get in touch with the podcast listeners, of course, you can go to buildingthegamepodcast.com. There you can find a link to our Discord. You can also come to our weekly meetups on Discord, Tuesdays at 7 p.m. Pretty awesome. And then you can email us at buildingthegamepodcast@gmail.com, or you can keep coming back every single week. Until next time, good night.
Good night.
Building the game with Jason and friends, with Jason and friends. Building the game with Jason and friends, with Jason and friends. The end of the episode, that's
when it technically ends.